I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog of that key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on the right beside me.
When you run down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program. Here on, that's very good, but I think we heard it once. Here on the fighting side of me, here on altrighttv.com. And this is, of course, White Resistance Radio, with lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Well, more news on the on the blockade organized by radical Indians, the Mohawk warriors, so-called, in Ontario, blocking the main CN east-west rail line that runs along the north side of Lake Ontario. Then their blockade is at Tayendanega, which is just west of Belleville, Ontario. I say more news. Oh, well, yeah, nothing's happening. They continue, the politicians continue to consult, the police continue to monitor the situation, which means they do nothing. Meanwhile, we are on the brink of having thousands of layoffs across Canada as supply chains dry up. It's impossible to get many goods shipped to market. And this will have a severe impact on people. In fact, already CN Rail is laying people off, and other businesses are within a couple of days of having to do that. I mean, if your factory can't work or operate because you're missing essential parts or essential raw materials which come by train, you've got a problem. One of Canada's major meat packers, Maple Leaf Foods, says almost two-thirds of its meat gets shipped across the country by rail. Now, if they don't have the rail, you say, well, take it, use trucks. Well, the trucks are now almost all paid for, I mean, all spoken for, and the prices are going very, very, very high. You know, it's the old supply and demand. So if there's big demand and limited supply, well, you know, the direction the prices are going to go to. Fortunately, there is some pushback. And let me suggest to you things that can be done. Number one, speak up. At the very least, go to your Member of Parliament's office, regardless of the party, and let them know in no uncertain terms what you expect is for the government to enforce the law. Now, I read a very interesting and learned discussion today, because the party line being put out by some of the politicians is politicians can't interfere in law enforcement. Well, wait a sec. Yeah, they can. There are three branches of government. The lawmakers, in that case the Parliament of Canada, who make the laws or the rules. The executive, in this case, the government, the cabinet, and government departments who implement or enforce the rules. And then there are the courts that decide infractions of rules or laws or disputes as to what the law might mean or whether the law was constitutional. Now, so a law is passed. For instance, you cannot interfere you can't block roads and railways. It's public access and must not be blocked. Okay. The Mohawk Warriors have blocked the railway tracks at Tiendanega. CN Rail went to the courts and got an injunction. So the courts say, you must move. Now, the politicians desperately, at least the Liberal politicians desperately, wanted to avoid doing anything, or rather doing anything to annoy their radical Indian allies, said, well, we can't interfere. It's up to the police. Well, not exactly. It is up to the police to enforce the law. If there's been an infraction, or here quite clearly there is. There's no question about it that taking over the blocking the railway tracks is contrary to the law. This is not a trick question. This is not an unresolved situation. This is quite clearly, plain and simple, breaking the law. So, okay, if for whatever reason the police refuse to obey, to enforce the law, then it is up to the executive branch of the country, that is, the government as such, the government, not the parliament, the government, to do so. They're the executive. They have every right to give the police a direct order. Look, stop dithering. We know it's an unpopular task to go in there and clear the tell them you're clearing the tracks. I mean, it's that simple. You get off the tracks right now, or else, and the or else will be arrest. If you resist, we'll answer you with suitable force. It is up to the government to see that they're part of the executive branch. Enforces the law. That's the police. If the police refuse, then the police commander should be fired, or more, or worse, or himself charged. That's the way a functioning authority works. And what we have so far seen massive buckpacking passing. The federal government wants dialogue, and they say, well, any enforcement's up to the province. Well, technically, in Ontario, that would be true. It's up to the Ontario Provincial Police. But it's not up to them to enforce an injunction. How they do it, you know, whether they bring in a fire truck, as I suggest, and in this freezing cold spray the protesters with water so they freeze, or anyway, so they basically have to withdraw from the field of battle. or whether they bring an armored car, or whether they bring 10 squad cars and 30, 40 cops, or five squad cars and 10 and 20 cops, the exact tactics are up to them. That's right. But as to whether the law will be enforced, that shouldn't be a question. The police actually shouldn't have to wait for the politicians to tell them. But okay, if they are tentative about it. And you know, part of the problem is they don't want to be hung out to dry, because if they clear these the blockade, and if there is any pushing and shoving, or worse still, if there's serious violence, then they will be accused of police brutality. And that's where the politicians have to have some guts. Absent an obvious, wild overreaction, it's to be hoped that the politicians will back the actions of the police. But we are such a wimpified, pussified, broken country that all of that's down. And what that means, you know, this is not it's not a laughing matter. What this means is a breakdown of law and order. And essentially, if we can't, through normal channels, that is the railways, get a lot of our goods to market, and a lot of and parts to put their factories and etc., we cease to be function credibly as a country. Another economic reality over the last 20 years is that we have become pretty much an on-demand supply chain. For instance, most retail stores and many factories do not have a large supply of goods in the case of retail stores, parts in the case of factories. Everything is on-demand delivery. So a store will let's leave aside grocery stores. A Canadian Tire, let's say, which sells a variety of automobile-related products, home products, home cleaning products, electrical products, etc., may only have a week's supply of, let us say, a particular, let's say, something that goes relatively quickly, dishwasher soap. And it's set up with computers, which are able to do an inventory and know, we're a little low, we're going to be low on, let's say, Tide liquid detergent. So a call goes out to their warehouse, and in comes the Tide, along with other things they need, the next morning. And there are central warehouses for many of these larger department stores strung out across the country. And so the bottom, and they too have to be supplied on an ongoing basis. Much of that is done by rail. So maintaining the integrity of the rail lines is absolutely essential. You've got to think that behind all this, interdiction of the rail lines and so on, that there is a larger intelligence. We will, I think, someday find out that some of these protesters, especially the social justice warrior types that are joining, are being funded by big foundations in the United States that are bitterly anti-development, bitterly anti-the resource industry, carbon, and so on. Well, the majority is beginning to fight back, and I can do nothing but applaud some people in just south of Edmonton today. This is not violence, counter-protesters tear down a blockade on the CN rail line in Edmonton. One of the organizers said that they plan to maintain the boycott until Justin Trudeau intervened and the RCMP left sweat and territory. So this is a sort of a sympathy boycott. Well, some decent citizens took matters into their own hands. A blockade set up on the Canadian National Rail Line on the western edge of Edmonton in support of the Wet'suwet'en Hereditary Chiefs was being dismantled, at least temporarily, Wednesday after a handful of counter-protesters set up. About 20 people called Cousins for Wet'suwet'en, that's C-U-Z-Z-I-N-S, had set up barriers early in the day in solidarity with the Chiefs, who oppose a natural gas pipeline going through part of their traditional land in British Columbia. It's got to be pointed out almost every time that the elected Wet'suwet'en Chiefs have signed off on this pipeline, and they will get a royalty or rental, as they should, for the pipeline crossing their territory. And they'll also, of course, in the process of this being constructed, get jobs. Gee, good things, right? Yeah. But there's a faction within the hereditary Wet'suwet'en Chiefs who don't agree with this. Well, that's Wet'suwet'en internal politics. That shouldn't impact the rest of us. The blockade consisted of wooden pallets on the tracks and signs that say no consent and no pipelines on stolen land. Well, it's not stolen. It's Canada. One of the organizers, who was wearing a balaclava and called himself Poundmaker to protect his safety, said they had planned to maintain the blockade until Prime Minister Justin Trudeau intervened and the RCMP left the Wet'suwet'en territory in BC, where the RCMP have dismantled a road barrier and are clearing the way so workers can work on the pipeline. Now, isn't it interesting that the leader of these terrorists, and they are, they're law, let's call them lawbreakers, these lawbreakers, is anonymous. He's wearing a balaclava and calls himself Poundmaker. Poundmaker was a Canadian Indian chief back in the 1880s who was part of a rebellion against the Dominion government. Confrontations with counter-protesters at the site, however, led Poundmaker and others to abandon the blockade. They said they wanted to keep it peaceful. Poundmaker didn't rule out erecting a blockade again at the site or somewhere else. Site 1 wasn't the only site we had in mind. Counter-protesters argued with protesters. Wet'suwet'en supporters linked arms in front of their camp as a few counter-protesters tried to remove pallets and other materials from the tracks. This is the violence. See, this is the violence, said a protester, who had his face covered. Anonymous goon. This is not violence. I'm trying to remove some garbage, a counter-protester said. Yeah, it's blocking the tracks. Guy Simpson, an oil field worker from Leduc, Alberta, said he decided to show up at the blockade after seeing it on social media. One blockade at a time. I'll clean it up. He said after loading some items from the camp on his pickup truck. Simpson and other counter-protesters removed the wooden pallets and other materials that were on the tracks. Another man with a beard and a baseball cap driving a black pickup truck stopped on the road over the tracks and yelled at the protesters from his window. There's a lot of hard-working people out here. I'm taking time out of work right now so I can tell you punks to get to work. A protester sarcastically replied, you really showed us. The pickup driver shouted as he drove off, why don't you guys just drop dead? You can't even uncover your faces. Palmaker said he knows people who are upset that the blockades across the country are affecting the economy and jobs. I know they think we're coming after oil and gas, he said, but we're focused on justice for Indigenous people right now. We're focused on trying to build a future for everyone. No, you shut down the economy, there won't be a future for anyone. And it's not the Indigenous people that you're fighting for. Many of the Indigenous people, the Indian bands, have signed with one or another of the pipeline companies. They're on board for this. Later in the day, an Edmonton judge granted the company a 30-day injunction applying to all rail lines in Alberta. CN lawyers had argued that the company had nothing to do with this dispute and is being hurt economically by the blockades. Lawyers said a train was bearing down on the blockade at about 4:30 a.m. when CN received an anonymous phone tip about the protest on the tracks. The train stopped 20 cars short of the blockade. They said the blockade had held up 14 trains by lunchtime, backing up traffic and threatening perishable and hazardous goods. Now, the real outrage here is that as soon as CNU, their track was being blocked, the police should have come and removed it, removed the protesters, and taken whatever means would be necessary to clear the tracks. Where are the police? I know they're at the local Tim Hortons swilling coffee. Alberta Justice Minister Doug Schweitzer said he expects police to enforce the order on any boycotts. Albertans will not be economic hostages while lawbreakers block critical infrastructure such as rail lines, he wrote on Twitter. Premier Jason Kenney, who's been critical of the blockades popping up across the country, said he expected police to respect and enforce court orders. He planned to be on an afternoon conference call with all Canada's premiers about the blockades. These illegal blockades, there are people losing their jobs, blue-collar people, vulnerable people, he said in Calgary. What is happening here is anarchy, and it is. And there's some more background. Trudeau was in Ottawa. Well, I said, well, nothing was happening today. Well, yeah, let's see. He has a statement. Okay. Trudeau said his government is trying to find a resolution, but he also acknowledged the economic effect the rail blockades are having across the country. Quote, we know that people are facing shortages, they're facing disruptions, they're facing layoffs. That's unacceptable. That's why we're going to continue working extremely hard with everyone involved to resolve the situation as quickly as possible. Yep, I'll tell you, you want to resolve it quickly. You get the police, or you authorize the police, in case they need further prodding or prompting, to approach wherever there's an illegal blockade and tell those blockading it, you have 5 minutes to dismantle this blockade or to withdraw. Give them an area. Withdraw 50 yards, let's say. Get out of the site. Or you will be arrested. And then dismantle the blockade. And anybody who attempts to interfere, arrest them. No questions asked. And back that up with whatever is force is prudently necessary. Make sure they have enough people, enough officers on the scene, and also make sure that it's done fast. Don't say, well, if it isn't gone by Monday, you know, that gives them plenty of time round up a mass of supporters and so on. Now, those are police tactics, perhaps best left to the police. But make it fast. Trudeau says he realizes that there's severe economic impact. Well, do something about it. You don't have to go to the parties to resolve things. Long-range resolution of grievances, that's for another day. The problem today are these blockades. They must go. If they don't, there just is no solution. Well, let me suggest some other things people can do. I like what those guys in Alberta did. They did the job of the police. They went in there and they dismantled the barrier of wooden pallets laid out across the railway tracks. You should contact your member of parliament, regardless of party. If your member of parliament is conservative, let him know that you support the conservative stand demanding an immediate end of the blockades. Go in and arrest them if necessary. If your member of parliament is from the Liberal or the Socialist New Democratic Party or the Bloc Québécois or the Green Party, your member of Parliament's party has been enabling the natives. They have failed to call for an immediate end to the blockade. Immediate end. That it's non-negotiable. They're breaking the law. If you've lost your job, if you've been unemployed, if you're unemployed, if you've been laid off, I suggest you take your whole family and friends, if you can round them up, go to your MP's office and sit in. Yeah, that's right. Sit down and say, we're not leaving. You bring, your inaction brings, brought financial damage to me. I'm going to bring some misery to you. And by the way, get me a coffee. And the authorities have done that for natives illegally blocking rail lines and roads. Go and get me a coffee, and that'll be a double-double. And you say, while you're at it, get me a donut, too. Bring the misery to them. I suggest, of course, non-violently. And if they start objecting, say, well, you had no problem with overprivileged natives blocking a major railway line, and you won't enforce the law. Why should I obey it? The time has come to bring the war to them. Let me see. Lots more news and views for our people. It's hard to keep up. Oh, yes. Well, this is a very interesting article along the same lines by two authors, or I should say co-authors, Colleen Collins, she's the interim CEO and Vice President of the Canada West Foundation, and Marla Ornstein is Director of the Natural Resources Centre of the Canada West Foundation. And the Canada West Foundation represents, as you might guess from the name, some of the interests of Western Canada, particularly the resource economy. Canada has had its hands slapped. And this is actually quite funny. In December, the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, part of the United Nations Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. The longer the title, the more useless they are. And you'll get to see why. Tabled a decision, acting under its early warning and urgent action procedure, the committee called for Canada to suspend construction and cancel all permits for the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion, Site C hydroelectric dam, and Coastal Gas Link natural gas pipeline. It's the latter one, the Coastal Link natural gas pipeline, that is the subject of opposition by the hereditary chiefs of the Wet'suwet'en. Must again be acknowledged that the elected chiefs have signed on to the agreement. The Trans Mountain Pipeline is another pipeline. It's one that the government has now promised, after years and years of dithering and cancellations and so on, to build. It's essential for getting Alberta tar sands oil to the port of Vancouver for export. The reason that is for this call of these three major resource development projects be halted. It felt that the Canadian government had not obtained free, prior, and informed consent from all affected Indigenous groups, and that it had not fully and adequately discharged its duty to consult. That's quite a claim, and it's also quite a stretch. The committee claims that the government of Canada has engaged in, quote, a refusal to consider free, prior, and informed consent as a requirement for any measure, such as the large-scale development projects. This is just nonsense, and shows that the committee clearly hasn't done its homework before issuing its condemnation. And that's one of the reasons we should pay absolutely no attention to the United Nations. It's dominated by failed states and corrupt governments. It is a massive fund waster. Its bureaucrats are paid obscene salaries. And it's fundamentally hostile to the West. Why should we belong? Why should we even be a member of the Parliament of Fools? The committee claims that the government of Canada has, whether or not you agree with the government's decision to approve
these projects. It's difficult to characterize almost 10 years of consultation undertaken by project proponents, the regulator and government and confederal government, combined with numerous judicial reviews in the highest courts, substantive accommodation measures, and the enshrinement in the Constitution of the duty to consult, as a refusal to consider the preferences of affected indigenous groups. Now, consult is not the same thing as to grant people a veto. They're not the same thing. Consult means to inform them of what's happening, get their input on what's happening, give thoughtful consideration to any objections or suggestions they may have. It's not a carte blanche for the natives to simply shut down a project. Consultation does not mean an absolute obligation to get their agreement. But this minor verbal smack points to a bigger problem. The United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, or UNDRIP, UNDRIP, well named, was put forward by the UN in 2007. It sets out the collective and individual rights of Indigenous people, particularly in relation to cultural expression, identity, language, employment, health, education, and critically resource development. The Canadian government first endorsed the aspirations of the Declaration in 2010, but there's good reason why Canada has not yet adopted it into legislation, because actually implementing the wording of the Declaration under Canadian law is extremely difficult. That we shouldn't have even endorsed the aspirations of this. It's wildly overbroad. One example of this difficulty is provided by Ken Coates, a senior fellow of the Macdonald Laurier Institute and a strong supporter of the Declaration, who notes that UNDRIP requires the government to provide Indigenous people with education in their own culture and provide it in their own language. As Mr. Coates states, be done to reverse the tragic decline of Aboriginal languages and culture. However, I mean, probably something should be done. Nevertheless, providing high quality education in Indigenous languages, there are 75 separate language groups, not just languages, language groups, and there are languages within the groups across the country. Many with populations of under 1,000 people, and large numbers dispersed in cities. To provide high-quality education, what, from kindergarten to graduate school, or even just kindergarten to grade 12, would be a monumental undertaking with little guarantee that could be done effectively. If you've got a group of people, you've only got 1,000 people who speak a language, you're going to set up a high school for them, all in their own language? Where would you even get the instructors? That's the problem with signing on to bullshit. Now, I'm all in favor of assisting natives to preserve their native languages, of course. I have a background in linguistics. I could hardly be opposed to it. But to set this down as a requirement is, to be nice, impractical. Similarly, then Attorney General, and might be noted, Native activist herself, Jody Wilson-Raybould, explained in 2016, "We can't just take all 46 articles of the Declaration and put it into legislation. We need to look at each article. We need to operationalize," whatever that means, "that based on the priorities that Indigenous communities are bringing forward." And anyway, so... not as easy as it sounds. Another problem of implementing UNDRIP was highlighted by the charges that the UN Committee leveled against the government of Canada. There's no working definition either within Canada or from the UN of what comprises free, prior, and informed consent. The committee is asking the Canadian government to ignore its own legislation, including the Constitution, and immediately revoke decisions that have been developed through a rigorous process and tested in Canadian courts. It is asking the Canadian government to ignore the community consensus expressed by the elected chiefs and councils along both pipelines, where the pipelines have gained the support and consent of most of the tribes or the reservations along the way. And what is free, prior, and informed consent? I don't think we should have ever gone along with this idea that the native band should have to consent. As with any decision in the national interest, many concerns need to be taken into consideration. But there may come a time, in fact I think there has come a time, because this is overwhelmingly in the national interest, where a decision has to be made. And a native band may not get everything it wants. Anyway, interesting article. And of course, some of this goes back to fundamental problems with our government and the dominant ideology. Once you accept cultural Marxism, and you accept a world in which is divided up into the oppressed and oppressors. Oh yeah, incidentally, that just happened to be us. Oh yeah, you may have forgotten that. Where white Europeans are of the oppressors, and the native people are the oppressed. Once you adopt this this world of victimology, it's hard to react effectively to this. You've already essentially bought the righteousness of their worldview. Here's a scary report out of England. In the United Kingdom, medical care could be denied to outspoken Christians in cases that are not emergencies. This is what our country, with its leftist, liberal, socialist leadership, it's imperative that our president be reelected, and I don't mean maybe, well, this is actually referring to the United States. This is another solid, valid reason not to entrust government with everybody's health care, politics. We've all seen how the socialist Democrats do that. It needs to be left to the private sector, and with some wise legislation guiding it. Democrats have no problem murdering babies through abortion, and they have no problem murdering adults if they disagree with them. Time to fill the Congress and White House with Christian Republicans like Donald Trump. And this is all referencing a story out of England. I should suggest this was a person editorializing about this story. In the UK, medical care could be denied to outspoken Christians in cases that are not emergencies. Now, that's pretty pretty wild. If you espouse a traditional biblical worldview, you might be left on your own to die in a British hospital. Patients in the National Health Service, that's the publicly funded system that provides health care in the United Kingdom, could be denied treatment if a staff member feels victimized by something a patient says. Oh yeah, I'm a nurse, but it's outside my comfort zone. A National Health Service memo Tuesday cited a rise in staffers' reports of discrimination last year, including the highest level of reported sexism and intolerance of religion and sexuality.
It's not hard to imagine the claims of intolerance of sexuality will be leveled against Christian patients who don't embrace the LGBTQ agenda. According to a report in the Telegraph this week, beginning in April, quote, any patient or hospital visitor found to be inflicting discriminatory or harassing behavior on staff could be barred from receiving care unless the case is an emergency. This is insane. Any patient or hospital visitor found to be inflicting discriminatory or harassing behavior on staff. What's discriminatory? If the patient says, I'd rather not be touched by a mincing homosexual. That's discriminatory. I would rather my doctor not have performed abortions. That's discriminatory. What's harassing? Well, harassing is so broad. Is a comment harassing? Well, some people think it is. Based on the 2019 National Health Service staff survey, incidents of discrimination rose from 5.8% to 7.2% in 5 years. So on the face of it, the inclusion of anti-discrimination protection makes sense. But percent of what? You know, they say figures don't lie. But liars figure. Employers are responsible for making sure their place of business is not hostile, is not a hostile work environment for their employees. Sometimes that includes refusing services if the employee feels threatened or offended. Offended! Well, I'm offended when somebody walks in reeking of curry and wearing a turban, but I suspect they wouldn't be concerned about my feeling offense. If the workplace is a cafe, it's an inconvenience for a barista to refuse a cup of coffee to that customer. But in healthcare, literally a life or death situation. While there is a case for emergencies, what about someone who's fighting stage 4 lung cancer? If it isn't an emergency like a heart attack, but without proper treatment, the patient will soon be just as dead. This is one more retreat from a society governed by Christian principles, and that is in fact what we're dealing with today. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on altrighttv.com. And I'm going to play some music. And I want to thank Mark and Tina Palazzola from St. Louis, Missouri for having sent me this. This is Ulster folk music. And this was music that the Irish settlers brought over from Northern Ireland, and many of them settled in Appalachia. Thank you.
You
One evening folk measure out and move to view their fields all alone. Down by the banks of Knockaring, where beauty and pleasure were known, I spied a fair maid at her labors, which caused me to stay for a while. And I thought of her goddess of beauty, that blooming bright star of Bright Isle. I humbled myself to her beauty, fair maiden, where do you belong? Are you from heaven descended, abiding in Cupid's fair throne? Young man, I will tell you a secret. It's true, I'm a maid that is poor. And to part from my vows and my promise is more than my heart can endure. Therefore, I'll remain at my service and go through all my hardships and toil and wait for the lad that has left me all alone on the banks of Fair Isle. Young maiden, I wish not to banter. 'Tis true I come here in disguise. I came here to fulfill my last promise and hoped it could be a surprise. All I know is you're a maid I love dearly, and you've been in my heart all the while. For me there is no other damsel than my blooming bright star of Fair Isle. For me there is no other damsel than my blooming bright star of Fair Isle.
Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave